land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Good evening. Thank you for listening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. This evening, our guest is Lynn Loacker of Project W. This is an initiative of Davis Wright and Tremaine. In just a moment, Lynn will be back and tell us all about what she's up to. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy, and thank you so much for joining us. This evening, our guest is Lynn Loacker. Thank you so much for joining us, Lynn.
Hello, Carol. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Tell our listeners just a little brief intro, who you are, what you're up to, and what is Project W?
Happy to do that. I'm a lawyer. I grew up closer to where you are than where I am now, which is New York. I grew up in Seattle before the Amazon days, and I went to school in the San Francisco Bay Area, started practicing law in New York, and I've been doing that for over 35 years. And I am now with a firm in New York. We have offices around the country, Davis Wright Tremaine, as you mentioned. And a few years ago, there were two things that really struck me. One, I was continued to be dismayed about the lack of progress of women in the law. More than 50% of law school classes are women. More than 50% of our younger lawyers in the firm are women. But we only still have 25% of our partners are women. And in addition, I realized that in my 35 years of practice, I'd only had one woman client. All the other clients were men. And those two considerations sort of converged, and I realized, or I had the insight, that maybe if we had more women clients, they would hire women lawyers, and we'd have more women lawyers who would build substantial practices and become equity partners. So I really started Project W, which is an initiative to support women in business and women entrepreneurs with the goal to ultimately developing more women successful lawyers.
So I'm curious, Lynn, what that experience was like for you being a female lawyer in essentially a man's world, and most of your business clients being men. Were you well received as a female lawyer?
Yes, you know, I think initially when I was, part of it's just being young, but initially I think I was underestimated as a young woman when I would do just a competent job. I would get highly praised, and I think it was because most of the older men just assumed I wouldn't do as well as my male peers. And, you know, there were the typical stories of being asked to go get coffee when I was actually there to negotiate a deal. And I also had the experience of being taken off a transaction because I was a woman and the client wanted a man leading the deal. That all has improved a lot. But as in many industries, there's still a tremendous imbalance in gender. And I think the female founders that we work with through Project W are going to have a big impact on that.
Were there women that functioned as your role models as you advanced through your career?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that, and I really didn't have too many women role models. When I was growing up, my father had his own business, which was a family business. My mother didn't work outside the home. And I didn't know any women that were lawyers or accountants or bankers. When I think about it, I do think back about some women politicians I remember, and this will certainly date me. And it's interesting now that there's so many women in Congress, but Shirley Chisholm, Margaret Chase Smith, Barbara Jordan, they were sort of trailblazers, and I thought they have power and they can make change. And so that was one of the things that drew me to law, that I think you can accumulate and exercise some power and really become a change agent.
It sounds like that's why you went into law, but why did you find yourself working with businesses?
I sort of just ended up working on the business side of the practice rather than being a trial lawyer and litigating. I was always intrigued by all the components of making a successful business, you know, the kind of product you had or the service you had, who your customers were, how you satisfied them, how you identified your market. And that's what I love doing right now, working with women entrepreneurs who are building businesses, really watching them confront those challenges and figuring out what product is going to satisfy a particular market, where there's a particular opportunity that no one else sees and they can fill that need.
So maybe you had just a little bit of entrepreneur spirit from the beginning.
I may have, but you know, lawyers are inherently a risk adverse tribe. I mean, it's a profession that's pretty well defined. You know what you're going to do. So I frankly don't know whether when I was starting out on my career, whether I would have had the courage to build my own business. And I certainly now, when I watch women who are building companies, and they really are fearless. They have a mission, they have a goal, they are pursuing it with, you know, a great amount of energy and creativity. So I'm sort of living vicariously. I didn't do it myself, but I get my vicarious thrills.
Let's talk just a little bit more about women in business and what spurred you on to found Project W. There's some very paltry statistics. Can you share?
Well, there are a bunch of paltry statistics. One is that I forget who the last CEO of a public company was who stepped down. There are now only 5% of the CEOs of public companies are women. And those are the most mature companies. And when you think, how do we solve that problem, it's we need to have companies, startups, led by women that will grow, be successful, and become the next generation of public companies or big private companies. And there's another really paltry statistic, and that's that the venture capital, which is generally the money that fuels early stage companies, only about 2% of the total venture capital, and it's billions, goes to female founders investing in their companies. And frankly, black female founders get just a fraction of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that hasn't changed much. I mean, been hovered around the 2% for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. So Lynn, what I'm surmising from all of this is that it's really time for women to help women. And if we're waiting for men to give us a hand up, or to open the door, we really could be waiting for a very long time.
You know, I think that's right. I think we also, we do need male allies, and there are a lot of male allies there out in the the business world who are helping women, but we have to do it on our own to a great extent. And I think you see that in networks that are building up across the country. There are certainly more venture funds that are being founded by women and that are focused on investing in women-led companies. In just in the New York area, my area, there are several funds that exclusively invest in female-founded companies. They're also, those are sort of established funds that tend to invest in companies that at least have a product or service that's been fully developed, and usually they actually are out in the market and generating some revenue. But there are, you probably heard of angel investors, which are generally individuals that will write a check directly to invest in a company. And typically those have been men, and it, really that phenomenon of angel investing started in Silicon Valley. But there are more and more women angel investing groups. There's several in the New York area. And interestingly, there are a couple, Pipeline Angels and 37 Angels, that in addition to making investments, they're training future women investors. So they have fairly rigorous programs that, as a woman who may not have invested in a company, you go through a multi-week program where you learn about some of the legal issues, but more importantly, you learn about how do you place a value on a company? How do you know if you have, if the founder has the right team? How do you even begin to understand if it's a technology company, how the company works? So though organizations like Pipeline and 37 Angels are making a huge impact because not only are they funding women-led companies, but they're really developing a whole generation of new investors who are women.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by the mindset that you mentioned earlier. But women have been studied, analyzed, and looked at as business people for some time now, and we have some really interesting statistics.
Yes, you know, there was a recent research that's been written about quite a bit in the press and in blogs. It was conducted by an organization called Mass Challenge in Boston, and they have an accelerator program which works with early stage companies to help them build their technology, build their team, build their, refine their business model, and then makes investments in these companies. And Mass Challenge and the Boston Consulting Group did an analysis of, I think it was over 100 companies that had gone through that accelerator, and they discovered that startups that were founded by women performed better and generally generated 10% more revenue over a five-year period than companies that had only male founders. And you know, that was even though the female-led companies got less capital. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty amazing statistic. And you know, it's not atypical. You may remember from the financial crisis, there were analyses done where women money managers performed better in a really difficult scenario than their male counterparts. What I did think was interesting in this research, then BCG, Boston Consulting Group, had some commentary about why women-led companies tended to get less capital than their male counterparts. And a couple things they said that women were hesitant to respond to criticisms when they were negotiating or pitching to venture capitalists, and that they were less likely to really promote their technical credentials or even have technical credentials. And you know, we don't see that in our network. I think women are very good at defending themselves. They're very good at promoting their skills and their skill sets. So I don't really buy that that's the explanation why women have been so woefully underfunded.
Is it the belief that they just can't do it when the numbers just reflect that that's not true?
Well, you know, I think it's a couple. I think I would point to three things. One is lack of access. Until recently, it's been a pretty old boys network, and the venture capitalists are white men, and when they see a deal, they understand a deal, or they have an affinity for companies that are founded by white men, and then they pass on the opportunity to their friends. That's changing with the, you know, we were talking about the angel investing groups, the funds that are focused on female founders. So I think there is much more access to capital as more capital sources devoted to investing in women are coming to the fore. Another thing I think is that men who are the predominant venture capitalists, they often don't understand the markets that women are building companies in. If they're products that are focused on women's health or solving a particular issue that maybe a mother might have, they just may not get it. And by not getting it, they're missing some real market opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that there's clearly bias in the whole process. Mm-hmm. We have a moment. I can tell you about some really interesting research that was done by a woman at Columbia University.
We're going to take a quick break. We're about at that halfway point. And in just a moment, we will be back and talk a little more about that. This is Heartstock. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. This evening, our guest is Lynn Loacker. Hi again, Lynn.
Hi there.
We were just talking about some important statistics related to women in business and their access to capital.
Yeah, and when we broke, we were talking about what have been the impediments to women raising capital. And one of the key impediments has been just bias. That it's often implicit, that's built into the whole system of pitching to venture capitalists and raising money. And there's a woman at Columbia University who's been doing some fascinating research. Her name is Donna Konza. It's spelled Dana, but she pronounces it Donna. And she's just recently done a TED Talk on the subject. But what she did is she got access to over 100 of videos through the TechCrunch Accelerator. And they were videos of entrepreneurs pitching their company and then responding to questions posed to them by investors. And going through all those pitch sessions, what Donna and her team discovered was that investors asked women different questions than they asked men, but sometimes in a very subtle way. They asked women what Donna calls prevention questions. So it's backward-looking questions. It's questions about challenges and risks. What the investors asked men were what Donna calls promotion questions. So it was about opportunity, about growth. So they might ask a woman, how did you get the number of customers you got today? And was it hard? They would ask a man, well, I see you have 100,000 customers today. How do you see that growing? And the type of question begets a similar answer. So, you know, if you're asked a question that asks you to go back into history and talk about challenges, that's what the investor is going to remember, instead of remembering that this is a company that's going to grow year after year at a rapid rate. And of course, which one would you want to invest in? It would be the one that's going to grow big and successful. And what I find so groundbreaking and enlightening about that research is there actually some actionable items that you take away and can change can disrupt that bias. So if women entrepreneurs, are sensitive to the types of questions they're being asked, they can reframe their responses to be more promotional. You could say, well, we acquired, you know, we've got 10,000 customers today. We had to work hard to acquire them, but we've now got a marketing plan that's going to enable us to multiply that tenfold every year. And, you know, that the investor is going to be much more impressed with that. And it's also something that investors should be mindful of. If they can think twice about the way they frame a question, they're going to get a very different response. So I think what she's doing is absolutely groundbreaking, and it's gotten a lot of press, and it's something that women entrepreneurs should really read up on and think about as they start raising money.
And that's a great segue. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about the work that Project W is doing and why it's important?
Well, we do a variety of things. Our ultimate goal is to help female founders build great companies. We have a workshop, a day-long workshop, where we have very specific programming designed to help women raise money, scale their companies, market their products. In fact, last year and on our boot camp coming up this year, Donna Kahn's does a workshop where, and a sort of a master class, where founders actually get to try to reframe their questions promotionally. So we do that. We collaborate with a number of wonderful organizations and individuals who share our mission, and such as Springboard Enterprises, the Veneta Project, just to name two. And with Carol, the way you and I met with an investor and speaker who's very prominent in New York, Alicia Charette, she has a wonderful program called Point 25 that pairs entrepreneurs with potential advisors. So I'm a firm believer in leveraging the power of women and other women's organizations, and it just our community has expanded exponentially because we've done that. And we all share the same mission. We want to see women succeed.
I know that there's been quite a bit of research and discussion about diversity on teams. Can you talk a little bit about that and why are diverse teams more successful over the long term?
You know, I think part of it is bringing unique and different life experiences and perspectives to solving problems. And also in businesses where you are looking for opportunities that are unique, having unique perspectives often help you discover those unique opportunities. The other thing I think that I would say about women in leadership and teams, there have been some studies that have shown that women really focus on investing in people and in their people and in their employees. And that was exemplified by Jennifer Hyman, who is the CEO and co-founder of Rent the Runway. She announced in an op-ed piece in the New York Times sometime last year that Rent the Runway was going to pay all its employees the same benefits. So that meant that the guy in the warehouse got exactly the same health benefits, vacation, sick leave as she did as CEO or as the CFO or the COO. And I do think that notion of investing in people, empowering them, creates loyalty, creates a commitment to the company and the success of the company. So there are any number of ways I think diverse voices and diverse perspectives come to make a more successful company.
Yeah, it's a big subject, and we could probably do a whole show just on that. We've got about 2 minutes left. Any last words of advice for female founders, and how might folks reach you?
Well, that's a lot to put into two minutes, but I guess my advice to female founders would be to really follow your passion, to make connections. The power of women helping other women and connecting women is really incalculable. And ask for help. I think you'll find that other women are more than happy to help, as am I. So I can be reached I'm on Twitter at Lynn Loacker. I'm on LinkedIn. And if you Google me at DWT, I'll pop up and my email address and my phone number is there as well. And I'm always happy to talk to female founders or female investors and expand our network and try to make some helpful connections.
This is Heartstock Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.